All right. So while you're being a businessman, the issue of writing books is also. So you're a pretty busy person.
Right.
The first book, Once Upon a Time When We Were Colored, when does that begin? Do you remember the years?
It began in the military, so it would have been before 68.
But you hadn't really thought about it as being a book then.
In the military, I had a friend named Paul J. DeMunis, a white kid, we were both kids then, from Portland, Oregon, who ended up being the head of the Supreme Court for the state of Oregon. He was one of my best friends. Very intellectual. He would read my stuff, and he said, Clifton, you ought to write. You ought to make this a book. He said, I swear to you, Clifton, I can smell the food you're talking about. I can walk the streets you're talking about. You are a good writer. And Paul really encouraged me to write. So I began thinking about a book. But for 24 years, at least the first 12 years, everything I sent in was rejected. But the 24th year, my life changed here in Tulsa. I had all these little short stories in a pasteboard box. No book, just short stories in a pasteboard box that I had written and took them with me from Bangor, Maine to Washington, D.C. And every time something would happen, I'd write a story about something about Glenn Allen. Out of that box came the first book, Once Upon a Time When We Were Colored. It was written here in Tulsa. All of that was compiled here.
You said rejected. Your writings had been rejected?
I'd sent the short stories in.
To where?
Look Magazine, Time.
Anybody
that was publishing short stories.
And everything was rejected?
Everything was rejected.
You had you begin to wonder, really, am I as great as I think I am?
No, I had put the thing in a pasteboard box, sealed it up. I said, I can't write. This is not going to work. In Tulsa, do you remember a book called Cleora's Kitchens?
Yes.
Okay, I did a review of Cleora's Kitchens, and the publishers, whom I had never met, were there. That was Council Oak Books. I had never met them before. I didn't know anything about them. But I did that review of Cleora's Kitchen.
What was Cleora's Kitchen?
It was a cookbook and a story about a black cook here in Tulsa in the 20s and 30s and the major Tulsa families that she worked for. It was an incredible book. The publishers were there, and there was a lady there who had had maybe a couple of glasses of wine. She came up to the publisher. She said, he writes. I said, oh, God, don't say that. I had walked away from it. And they said, well, will you send me your stuff? I said, no, I won't do that. I said, if you let me come and read a story. They said, well, we don't usually do that, but we'll do it. So I read the story, which is called The End of a Season. And they said, if all of your writing is like that, we will publish the book. That's the story of Once Upon a Time When We Were Colored.
Wow. And you stumbled into it.
I stumbled. If there's something worse than stumbling, I did. I did. It wasn't a strategic effort on my part at all.
So this little paperback book I'm holding in my hand took on legs.
It took on legs.
And what became of it?
What became of it was shocking. They told me at Council Oaks that they would print 5,000 copies, but it wasn't because they thought the book was that good. It was because that was the break-even point for the publishing the book, get it down at a nice per-item cost, and you'd make their investment back rather quickly, depending on how many they would sell. But they said it'll last you about 5 years. In about 3 months, they were gone.
Really?
Then they had to reprint. And then the next thing happened, I was invited to be on the Phil Donahue show. First time in New York City. Went there totally unknown. There were four of the writers on program with me. They all had their people with them. I had nobody but me. I was sitting by the guacamole dip in the green room. Phil Donahue came in, introduced himself, very gracious man. But all the other people had PR people with them. So they were telling all these anecdotes to Mr. Donahue, but I had nobody to talk for me. I was there by myself. But long story short, we got out on stage. It was all taped live. They had about five books there. He began looking at all the books. And when he finished looking at all the books, my book ended up on top. So he started reading. There was a chapter called Luggage, Legs, and Gorgeous Colored Women. Yeah. He began reading that and didn't stop. He never got to the other books. I came to New York unknown. I left New York known all over Phil Donahue's world. And the telephone lines in Tulsa were breaking down. There were so many calls coming for that book.
At Council Oak Books.
Yes.
And they were sending him out. Wow. So that was your big break there.
That was the big break.
But then, it says right here on the cover, now a major motion picture. How did you stumble into that?
I stumbled.
How did that come
Stumbling
about?
Is not bad.
No, it isn't.
The newspaper in Boston. What is
Globe.
The Boston Globe did an incredible review of this book. And I started getting calls from agents all over L.A. about a movie. And that's what led me eventually to Tim Reed, because he was part of that. Whomever was his agent must have called about it. So over the course of time, he became the producer of that.
Who starred in the movie?
Felicia Rashad, Al Freeman Jr., Polly Bergen were the three major stars.
You can buy that today, yeah. Can't you, on yeah. Amazon?
Right.
Well, what a thrill that had to be.
It was. But one thing I did learn, that it doesn't matter if it's your life and your book. Once you sign the papers to the producer, it becomes their life and their book.
Did you like the way they produced it?
I did. There was one scene in there that I didn't like. It was an untrue scene, but I realized they were working a movie. In the movie, I'm born in the field. And I told, no, they got that wrong. I said, I was born in my great-grandfather's house. And he just looked at me and said, but not in this movie. And that's when I realized that I had lost my voice.
So was it fun to see yourself being played on screen?
You know, I think the story, the overarching story, was more important to me than me being there. Because it was one of the first times that they had gone into the pre-integrated South to look inside the house. There was a couple of scenes about the Ku Klux Klan, but for the most part, it was the interior lives of African Americans prior to integration.
We didn't talk about Ku Klux Klan. Did you feel that as a growing boy? You said you were picking cotton and all that.
Oh, it was always, I mean, it was just part of the culture. You knew who were members of the Ku Klux Klan. And there were times that they rode in little towns like Glen Allen was probably not on their radar to a great extent.
So you didn't see burning crosses?
I've never seen a burning cross.
And you didn't see them riding in on horses or coming into your town or anything?
I've not, but I knew who they were because everybody knew who the members of the Klan were. They were not disposed to keeping themselves in secret. They wanted you to know who they were.
This book, When We Were Colored. Just a moment about that title. When We Were Colored, what does that mean, and what are you today?
Well, that really has nothing to do with it. Let me tell you what really happened, how I got that title, because there was no title for the book. And Council Oak said, we got to have a title. What are you going to call it? I said, I don't know. Our son was a little boy at the time. So I was up in his room reading to him a children's book, and it said, Once Upon a Time, and it just hit me like a lead balloon. Because the title of the book was not When We Were Colored, Once Upon a Time When We Were Colored. I called Paulette Millichap for Council Oaks, and I said, I got the title, Once Upon a Time, When We Were Colored. Because I wanted to define a period in time that existed for nearly every African American in this country. And that period of time was defined when all of our legal documents, everything was defined as colored. The Glen Allen Color School is where I went. We went to the Glen Allen Health, was the color. Everything was defined by color. Black was a term not used at the time. Negro was used, but not as frequently as colored. Colored was the term, but that also became the parameters of time that I was talking about as well.
When did black become a name?
In the
60s. Who started it?
I would say the black movement, the Black Panthers, that move, I'm black and I'm proud, because that was a term, just like I haven't ever seen a white person either. I've seen people who have been different color than me, but this paper is white, and I've never seen a person that looked like this, but that's the term that defined them. So the term that found was black, but for whatever reason, we had been led to believe that black was a negative term, so we didn't use it. You use everything other than black. But all of a sudden, somebody said, no, I'm from Africa. I'm black. I'm from the black race. So the term black became the next term of description.
It took you a while to get used to that?
I would say it probably took me a while to get used to it because you had African American and then you had black. You know, so it was a sequence of terms. And that's the price you pay for having come through the disposition of slavery, where names were dropped in the Atlantic. And once you got to South Carolina, to the shores, you were given names by other people.
And now we interchange black and African American.
American, right.
Both.
Mm-hmm.